This fine evening on OVA Tonight, we tackle the 1985 OVA Fightizer 1. And to our surprise, it's great.
It's pretty, really good, actually.
It's the type of thing we wanted to watch when we first decided to do this show. We figured they would all be like this one. And then we discovered that they were all creamed moms and creamy mommies and Mickey Momos. And then we watch this and it's like, oh, we're finally going somewhere. 1985 is going to end on a high point.
Yeah. It was all building up to this.
And then coming up after this is just more like this, just body horror.
Yeah.
Just love. Robots fighting,
love robots body horror.
Give robots, it
to me. Yeah,
just all that, just laser swords.
Oh yeah,
laser body horror. It's just all of that.
Everything you need and want from 80s anime, right here.
Yeah, right here at OVA Tonight. Welcome to OVA Tonight. I'm Eli Osman.
I'm David Caldwell.
There's a couple times we forgot to say our names when we recorded, and then we had to say it later, and then I had to awkwardly edit it back in because we forgot to say what our names were.
Yeah.
It's because we get too excited to talk about all this stuff.
Yeah.
But what is an OVA?
An OVA is an original video animation.
Yeah. Or sometimes it's a original animation video.
Yeah.
But people thought it stands for adult video, so they stuck with OVA instead of OAV. But this one, weirdly enough, came from Adult Magazine. So, I get the confusion.
Yeah, for sure.
But why are we doing this show?
Well, you know, with everything that's happening right now, we kind of retreated into our doomsday bunker.
Yeah.
And all we had time to bring with us was a hard drive chock full of
it was a Seagate 350 gig external hard drive.
Yeah.
It's a 2.0 USB hard drive, so it's very slow. And we have an old gateway laptop down here in this bunker. And we are watching every OVA in order, or at least that's on this hard drive. And it seems like it's most of them in rough order.
Yeah.
But main more reason we're in this, we're in this bunker is there's been UFOs shooting down UFOs stuff. Those crazy stories popping up. There was that toxic train derailment in my home state of Ohio. And now it's like toxic apocalyptic cloud just swarming Ohio, which is already a toxic place on its own. It really is, because there's this Mark Ruffalo movie called Dark Waters. It's all about the DuPont poisoning the West Virginia, Ohio area, which was where I'm from. And it was nice to see a movie that was like, oh, I recognize all those locations.
Yeah.
They also shot Bones and All where I'm from, too. The cannibal movie.
Yeah.
That was actually closer to where I lived than the other one was.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. Shout out to Aberdeen, Ohio. No one ever should shout out to that place. Yeah. But since there's like a big train derailment, which, by the way, that train had Civil War era brakes.
Yeah. Apparently most trains still use that technology.
Yeah. Yeah.
To brake. when they've had
I think updated only like safe technology Subway, for decades. Yeah, only like Subway and like bullet train stuff, I think, have actually upgraded their brake systems. But most of the stuff uses like, you know, 1800s technology.
Yeah, because in America,
but if it ain't broke, you don't need to fix it. Oh wait, it is broke. It was broke. But yeah, but that's our news hot take. That's why we're in this bunker. We're just having the Seagate full of OVAs, old anime that we're slowly going through as reading old MRE meals and Chef Boyardee SpaghettiOs.
Yep.
We bought way too much Vienna sausages.
Yeah.
That's too much sodium and like not enough. Like we have barely any water.
No.
We have three different flavors of Vienna sausages, but only like 2 gallons of water. So I'm concerned on how we're going to survive down here in this bunker.
Yeah. It's not looking good.
Like we have air. This is just a storage container buried in the ground. So I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll figure it out as we go through these OVAs. But what are we talking about today?
We are talking about Fight Icer 1. That was released. It's a three-part OVA series. The first part released on October 19th, 1985.
Yeah, and this one was a surprise for me. Because we watched other ones, the very multi-part ones. After watching like Dream Dimension, Hunter Fedora, like whatever the fuck it was called. Like I wasn't really super looking forward to this one because I didn't really like the last one was kind of meh, and they're all just kind of like nonsensical gibberish and just music videos and all this stuff. So this one I was like, eh, and I've never heard of it. And then it starts off with the very first part of the episode is just you have this cat like elf girl and wearing X-Men outfit, it looks like. That it comes up to a guy who like body horror transforms into a Lovecraftian monster and she blows him up, and then it like and I was like, oh okay, I didn't expect like graphic gory body horror in this one when it just looks like
not at all.
It looked like a dumb space thing, which it is.
It is, but also
it's so much more. But there's three parts. There's a part one, which is called Volume One, apparently. Part two is called The Challenge of Icer Sigma, which came out July 23rd, 1986. And part three, The Conclusion, came out on March 4th, 1987. And then there was a special compilation movie that came out on September 25th, 1987. There were all these released on VHS as well as Laserdisc. We watched an Ice Crisp like 1080p.
Oh yeah,
it was beautiful, real nice. beautiful copy of it. That you can find on YouTube at archive.org. But yeah, it was gorgeous looking one. I watched the three parts. I think you watched the movie, didn't you?
Yeah.
Now, what I liked about the episodes, they all ended with like a weird voiceover that's just like, "Will Icer one? Blah 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 blah." I don't think that was in the movie, but like it just doesn't fit in with the show at all.
Almost like next time on Dragon Ball Z.
Yeah, very much was, but like that.
Yeah, it doesn't fit this at all. But
we have a little synopsis here that I found. That's because it turns out most of these like synopsis are from like My Anime List and various other websites. You just use the same one. But it's about Nagase. Is that her name?
Nagisa.
Nagisa is a schoolgirl with schoolgirl tendencies, whatever that means. Waking up late, rushing off to school, meeting up with friends along the way. One morning, Nasuka comes across a woman dressed in a strange uniform who seems to stare at her. Unnerving, Nasuka, later that day, while staring out the window, Nasuka becomes aware of a ball bouncing by itself, which flings itself towards her window seat, shattering the glass, yet not harming her. Turning back until the front I'm not even fucking, I don't want to read this. This is not the, this is really just describing like one scene. This is a synopsis that exists all over the internet.
I know.
Of this just, show is one fucking scene.
Literally that one scene. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it's technically two scenes, but yeah.
Yeah.
Barely describes any.
So what do you think it's about from just, this is the hardest part of the show is other than saying Japanese names is trying to figure out what this is about to tell people what it's about. The best I can figure them up with is, it's about a cat like elf robot named, Iser One, who's looking for her partner.
Needs a partner to pilot her
Iser robot to fight the evil
giant robot.
Big gold Cthulhu people.
Yeah.
This is all what it's about. Yeah. But it's very kind of, it's a gay romance stuff as well. Mm-hmm. They don't really focus on it as much as I would like.
Yeah. They could have focused on it a lot more.
Yeah.
Would have been stronger for it, but
yeah, it would have been. The manga, which we get to a little bit later, does too much.
It goes too far.
So it goes way too far. But at first, like the girl, she ends up being like, all of her friends and her family end up transforming into these hideous monsters that like burst them from within them.
Yeah.
And just like there's like as like these like tentacles, grasshopper looking creatures that just burst out of them.
Yeah.
Which is pretty horrifying. And it happens. Yeah. There's this really cool scene of like the background of her friend's head, which is named Mommy. So is a little creamy Mommy reference again. the back of her head just opens up and like there's a mouth and like brains and then like tentacles squirt out. She ends up discovering her family was transformed and killed because of all this. And she just doesn't want to like, so Iser One shows up and like, I love you. We're partners now. That's what she says. And she's like, I don't know what's going on. I don't want
to fight
this.
My parents just died.
She's reacting very natural to the situation.
She's like, leave me alone. My parents just died.
And they keep trying to, and like the Iser keeps on throwing her into situations for making her like, oh, you need to be this, puts her in this robot naked to like fight this other creatures. And she's like, I don't know what to do with this. I don't know what's going on, which is very like Neon Genesis.
Yeah.
He didn't want to do any of that either. So it's,
because why would you?
And the reluctant hero is a nice, I like that as a nice trope. It's a little bit of that I think it's what made Sailor Moon work so well too, is that like, Sailor Moon herself doesn't really want to fight. And she's just kind of different character. It's not as just like the Joseph Campbell hero style that we constantly do and everything.
Right.
And then there's a bunch of stuff that happens that I'm drawing a blank on what any of it is.
Yeah. Giant robot fights, more body horror.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot more body horror. You have these Cthulhu people that are trying to enslave Earth, take over the planet. But it turns out Iser One's stopping is coming in to defeat them. And they have a lot of these giant robot battles, which truthfully, the robot stuff, I didn't care as much as that, that was my least interested part of it all. That was the part that kind of felt like a different anime. I don't think it completely like.
Yeah.
I did read a little bit of the original manga and it was more of the giant robot stuff. And I think but the OVA was more of the body horror stuff a little bit more. And I feel like that was a better, this is probably a better adaptation than it probably should have been.
Yeah.
Cause at this point their competitors were just like, just music videos and just episodes of scenes from previous episodes that we're just going to repackage as something else.
Yeah. So they definitely went above and beyond. what
they it's a good to do. It's a good 3-episode storyline. And it has a good conclusion in a way. It feels like very concise. I will say the animation styles and the different parts does slightly change. I'm pretty sure her parents are completely different people at the end of, cause they, at the end you see her parents again and I'm like, they don't look like that before.
They look a little different.
But granted, I think there is, that was like 2 years in production in there. So
there's a good 2 years.
I don't remember the second part that much.
Yeah.
That was when they introduced before they introduced Icer 2.
Mm-hmm.
And there were just a lot, there was a lot of just robot fights and like these robot and like the aliens and robots defeating the military. A lot of that stuff in the second part.
Yeah. Which that was also felt like from a different thing. Like these big, like Ultraman type ships flying around. I don't know. Yeah.
But what is this from? It's from a 1983. It is a 1983 horror. Fightizer 1 is from a 1983 hentai magazine called Lemon People. yes, it is hentai. For those you don't know, that is Japanese for pervert, and it is porn.
Yep.
It's a porn manga. That's what this is from. Now, this doesn't really have a whole lot of the porn qualities in this one. It does have a little bit of the gay storyline, or the Yuri, as it's called there, which means girl's love, which we'll get into that a little bit later. I have a little brief little synopsis on that, or the little history of it. And it's hentai itself is, I mean, it's been around forever. There's a really fascinating Japanese movie called Indo Porn. That's all about the artist guy from the early 1800s who did the tentacle porn stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Which, that's a good movie. It is fascinating because pornography has existed since art existed. It's always going hand in hand.
Yeah.
And what I best thing I figured out with Lemon People is it came out February of 82 and lasted till November of 98. It was kind of the first one that really kind of the hentai magazines that really focused more on manga and more like cutesy stuff.
Yeah.
I did find the issue that introduced this on. I found it on a, let's say one of those sites that you definitely need to make sure you either have a VPN or virus protection software.
Yeah.
Cause it was, I'm pretty sure it was a porn site. And it was stuff that I can't unsee now. It's a lot of if you would show just a single page to someone who doesn't know what any of this is in any fathom of the way, who knows nothing about anime, anything whatsoever, I'm pretty sure they would be like, what the fuck did you show me? I'm calling the police.
Yeah.
Because it is graphic, it's disturbing, and this is probably the most tasteful story in there. Because the original manga, it's the gay relationship is focused on heavily, while with the robot fighting as well. And the OVA turns out the human girl, she has these powers whenever she's with Icer 1 and the robot. And but in the comic book, which does make a little bit more sense in the comic book, she gets the power when they just in case my mom might be listening. She's not listening. She's no podcast star.
No.
but whenever they do coitus or any sexual activity that gives more power off, which does make a little bit more sense than it's just like this human has power for some reason.
Right. Yeah.
Which is what it's in the OVA.
Yeah, it has to be naked in the robot for some reason.
It is fascinating that they took away the sex and just added violence and gore.
Yeah,
because it's weirdly how that's perfectly socially acceptable, but the sex stuff isn't.
Yeah, I mean, that's how it is over here, kind of.
But, yeah.
You know.
Yeah. But Lemon People, there's some other OVAs, some other animes that came out these hentai magazines, but there's not hentai. Another one is Project Aiko, which we'll be watching soon, which I do. Mm-hmm. I've seen that and it's great. I love, it's really fun.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some other ones. I think it's made by the same studios. So they did some, it's fascinating. They took these weird stuff. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. most of the stories they do, is in the Lolita style, which is very disturbing. And, you know, I don't recommend.
Yeah, no.
And, but it was created by a guy named Aaron Ray,
mm-hmm.
who did this. And that's basically it.
Yeah, pretty much.
He did something else mm-hmm. called, he did another OVA that he was part of. Called Latias, which came out when did this come out?
It's like 1987.
Yeah, 87, which we may or may not get to. I don't know if that is, if it's not porn. It doesn't sound like it.
Yeah.
That's the only thing he did.
On this cover image, it does feature I guess the female main character in just underpants. Like one of those weird jackets.
Just anime itself. Anime itself is inherently pervy. Like there's, non-pervy anime. I think you just have just Studio Ghibli, and I think that's it. Even then, barely.
Yeah. Right.
You know, there's
still get it obscured every now.
Well, yeah. Which like the most famous on Spirited Away is all about like you know child sex trafficking. So
pretty much it. Yeah.
Who knows? It's more disturbing than it is pervy, though. I should say.
Yeah.
But the director and the writer on this one is the same guy, and his name is Toshiki Hirama. And he is he's done a little bit more stuff. He worked on Megazone 23. He did direct Cream Lemon, which we're not covering because that is a hentai series. Because
that was just straight up.
Because we were supposed to already cover that one because I'm coming 84, which is probably better than some of the ones we did watch.
Probably.
Cosmo Pink Shock, which I assume is a
sounds like a
hentai.
Yeah.
He did Dragon's Heaven. He did the character design for Dragon's Heaven, which is a pretty popular OVA.
Yeah.
He did the but most of the stuff he's mostly known for this and its spinoffs.
Yeah.
But yeah, but I did find some music.
Ooh, nice. Yeah, the music was pretty good.
Let me see what I found music wise. The music is by a guy named Watanabe. Yeah, Chume Watanabe. And he's done tons of stuff. He's done
tons of stuff. Looks like he passed away last year.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah, back in June.
It just sounds like every single anime that's ever existed in this time period, music-wise.
Yeah, that's true.
But I remember, like, when I was listening to the first part, it was very much. It kind of reminded me like Ennio Morricone. I was listening to the first episode music, and when I noticed it when I was watching it, it seemed a lot like Ennio Morricone.
Yeah.
But I can't really find examples of it because I'm finding just the normal. Because whenever there's very don't have the good examples to play. Because whenever the horror stuff was happening, had very different. It had almost like Italian horror movie music playing.
Yeah.
And then whenever the robot stuff happened, it sounded like it was like Ultraman or Spectre Man or Japanese Spider Man. Just seemed like those normal giant robot
fight music. Yeah.
Yeah, like this is normal giant robot fight music.
Yeah, which I love, but yeah, it's yeah.
Which is definitely what he's known for.
Too special. Which, yeah, I mean, yeah, looking at his credits, yeah. A lot of Mazinger Z, Getter Robo, some, I guess, animated Sentai series. One baseball anime from the 70s, so that's cool.
He's done so much.
Ooh, that title. I don't know about that title.
Yeah, a lot of them. I can't pronounce any of these. But he had a lot of the giant robot stuff. So that makes sense.
A lot of giant robot stuff.
Transformers Victory, whatever that is.
Oh, nice.
Was that the Japanese only series they did?
Yeah, there were three, technically Generation 1 Transformers series. And yeah, that was the last one they did.
Okay.
I've watched them. They're fun. Yeah. But, you know, they're traditional.
Sam. Put your cube in me. I only know it from like the movie. My Transformer knowledge is the toys are too expensive for my parents to buy me. And I didn't really watch the show. Then when Beastmaster came on, the animation style creeped me out.
Yeah. The early CG can be pretty
good. I found it disturbing.
But yeah. Victory is pretty fun.
He did Mobile Sheriff Jimbin.
That sounds cool.
Yeah. So this series, I really dug this one. And I was telling some of my friends I was texting them as I was watching it last night. I was just like, yeah, I guess you check it out. And they're like, is it creamy? Like, and I was like, no. I mean, no, yes.
Yes and no.
Yes and no.
A lot of those monsters are pretty creamy.
Yeah.
A lot of slime.
when you talk about OVAs, a lot of times people do want to watch this one, and I'm surprised this one isn't as popular.
Yeah,
it's not as popular as it should be because it checks all the boxes of all these OVA, and there's a lot more of these that are a lot more popular that's worse. So
yeah.
Like I enjoyed this more than I did like Wicked City, but you know, but it's very much of that ilk of like you have superpower people for whatever, you have body horror transforming,
but
they did make a sequel series in 1990 called Icer Reborn or Adventure Icer 3. And it was 6-episode series. It was considered a sequel to this. Came out in September 25th, 1990 to February 21st or 25th, 1991. Mm. And that was released on VHS and the Laserdisc in America as Icer 3. Mm. That's cool. And then it was later renamed Icer Reborn. It has a similar plot. I think they made the characters a little bit older. The main girl, I think she says she's a delivery girl and a base in the moon. Okay. So delivery girl who makes deliveries with a girl named Karawa on a base in the moon. The two encounter a new race of alien villains, but they are saved by Icer 3. While Icer 1 recovers from her long battle against Big Gold's legacy and self-proclaimed successor, Neo Gold, Sister Gray sends young Icer 3 to Earth. And the child turns out to be the best hope against the new threat. I don't know. I might check it out. It's the same creator, or it's the same director at least. So it probably.
I don't think I'm going to wait for us to get there.
No,
I might go ahead and watch it. Yeah.
Yeah. And then we have then it did another one called Ice Lion, or Ice Girl Ice Lions. Oh, I don't know how you pronounce that. Not even. Which is a 2-episode OVA from 1995, created by the same people. This one isn't a Yuri one. It's not about female intimacy. Mm. Instead, it's just more of a continuation of the last one.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, it takes place on an alternate timeline from Icer 1 and Icer Reborn because the placement of and a modern day with a more seemingly different main girl. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And yeah,
it's also made into a radio drama.
Yeah, I think I think all these were, when I was doing research, I kept seeing a lot of them were radio dramas.
Yeah.
They made, which I thought was kind of cool.
Yeah.
This one's also about like the Nezuka is a normal high school girl who wishes one day to become a professional wrestler.
Nice.
But she's suddenly approached by a robot known as ISIL instead of ICER, which urges her to save the Earth from invading aliens called Gias, led by Chaos and the Cross. Okay. Yeah, it just seems like they tend to focus more on the alien stuff. I think what made this one work so well was the Lovecraftian body horror that they throw into this like dumb mech robot show.
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, so I definitely recommend checking this one out. You can find it on YouTube and archive.org. Since this is our first dive into the Yuri subgenre of anime, I thought we should probably get into a little bit of that and what it is and some of the information on Yuri as a whole, which Yuri means girl's love and is a genre of Japanese media which focuses on the intimate relationship between female characters. This is a lot more common trope now, and it isn't necessarily a sexual thing. A lot of the ones I've seen were very much just like girls that are friends with each other but have like a deeper bond. It's very much like a bromance kind of thing, but it just has more of a weird name to it. And then sometimes there is ones like, I think there's one called Citrus. There is a lot more like overtly gay, sexually gay ones that are out there. Yuri on Ice is another one, but even that one's all dudes. But
yeah,
whatever.
I think that might just be the character's name, but
I thought it was like figure skating, so I never watched it. But why it's commonly associated with lesbianism, it isn't. But a lot of times it depicts more emotional and spiritual relationship between women that are not necessarily romantic or sexual in nature. But even though there are sexual nature and stuff.
Yeah,
it's commonly associated with anime and manga, and has been used to describe video games, light novels, literature. But it all sprung from the 1930s from this style of books known as Class S, which depicted lesbian attachments between platonic relationships, mostly that you had between graduating from school and marriage and stuff like that. But there was like actual same sex love and stuff like that as well.
Yeah.
And those are popular in Japanese girls magazines, but declined because of the heavy censorship during the war in 37. But a lot of those kind of made their way into shoujo manga, which is comics for girls, which we've already covered shoujo. Like that's, Magical Girl Shoujo, a lot of those are shoujo, but it declined. Class S declined in popularity in favor of more male female romances. They're mostly were focused on like private all girl schools and stuff. Just a lot of the more common, more lesbian stories very much are like that. But in 1970, there was a manga artist named Masaka Yashuri, who published a manga called Secret Love that focused on a love triangle between two girls and a boy, which noted as the first non-class S manga to depict an intimate relationship between women. And then later in 71, there was another one that most people identify as the first Yuri story. And it was a standalone story called The Couple in the White Room, which is about an all-girls Catholic school boarding school in France. Which checks out. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of French movies. That's the exact storyline of that.
Yeah.
And And that kind of led to more of the, but this area, the 70s and 80s, kind of known as the dark ages of Yuri. There wasn't a whole lot of that. There was some shoujo manga that dealt with like transgender characters, gender blurs, cross-dressing, which is very common now.
Yeah.
In both life and in anime.
Yeah.
There was other ones like The Rose of Verna Sales, which I've heard is supposed to be good, and Dear Brother. Those are popular. Those were turned into popular anime in the 80s and 90s, which you can find on, I think Crunchyroll has one of those.
Yeah, probably the, I think
Rose. But surprisingly, a lot of people believe the decline on Yuri stuff in this time period wasn't because of the gay subject matter as much as it was, it dealt with tragedies. Every story always ended in tragedy. And that was just like manga as a whole was kind of just very tragedy based. And I think that was a lot of people think like that may have been more of the decline than it was, you know, Puritan moral uproar or whatever.
That makes sense.
That's kind of Yuri up around this time period. Later on, it became, it's more of a normal genre.
Yeah.
That there's at least every season, there's a couple shows.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. It was kind of interesting to look that up a little bit. Yeah. I don't know the history of any of this.
Yeah. So I think I learned a little bit. I took like a Japanese like modern art history class in college. So we touched on that a little bit. But yeah.
It's interesting. At least they have more of a genre of it than they do here.
Yeah.
I mean, like we have gay entertainment now here, but it's such like for a while there, it was so separate.
Yeah.
But even their stuff still has like, it's still not perfect by no means.
Yeah, no.
like the transgender stuff they use is always kind of, it's always usually played more for laughs.
Laughs. Yeah.
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 But they do a lot where it's like, this character is like, oh, I'm a boy, I'm a girl and stuff like that. And they tend to do that a lot, but you know, cross-dressing has always been a thing for comedy. That's what Milton Berle always did. It was, we'd wear a dress and they thought it was hilarious.
Bugs Bunny.
Yeah, Bugs Bunny. Yeah. Yep. So I guess that's about all we have for this evening. I definitely recommend checking out this anime. It's great.
Oh yeah.
But what do we got coming up next week?
Next week we have the infamous Twinkle Nora Rock Me from 1985.
Yeah, but you can find this on YouTube. It's considered probably one of the worst animes to ever exist.
Yep.
Which is probably not true. Because I would say the worst ones are ones that are like and never really finished and released. The worst anime is the anime that's not made. I would say in a more poetic way. But This one's I've had people ask me, when are you gonna do Nora Nora Rock or Twinkle Nora Rock Me? And then not next week, but our next episode. Because I think we're bi-weekly now.
Yeah. I think we're gonna try that.
In this bunker.
In the bunker.
Because it's just like we're gonna be here for a long, 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 long time. So
we
don't want to run out of these episodes.
Yeah. We're in no hurry to get through them all.
And we need to spend more time like sitting in other corners of this bunker. We're in
away from each other. It's a pretty small bunker, so we'd have some alone time.
We got a pee and poop bucket.
But
the good thing is that we're not near UFOs or trains derailments or Night Court reboots. It is completely and utterly we're safe.
We are safe. Safe and set.
We have a safe down here that has I don't know what's in it. I don't have the combination.
It has one revolver with two bullets.
Okay. So if someone tries to burst in.
Emergencies.
If someone burst in to steal the Seagate hard drive full of OVAs, I'd be like, you're going to get two bullets straight in the gut. Because there's no way you're gonna get in here and try to watch Twinkle Noah rock me.
No.
So that's it for tonight. You can check out my other podcast, Stagecoach Justice, which I guess we took a little hiatus. So I don't know. We're having new episodes at the moment. But we have some coming up. I think we're doing Django.
Yeah. We're
covering the Italian spaghetti western movie Django's, which there's tons of those unofficial. I think there's like 85 of them. We're not doing 85.
Oh, well.
We're only doing like half a dozen or so.
Yeah.
But yeah, you can check those out. That's a fun little podcast where we just talk about westerns. Mm-hmm. We have I have a movie called The Reenactment that I co-wrote and produced and you did the storyboards on that. Yeah. Is currently available to watch for free on Tubi right now. Yeah. Which had a Super Bowl commercial. Did you see the Super Bowl ad with Tubi? Weird bunny rabbits?
No, I didn't see that.
Did you watch the Super Bowl?
No, I didn't.
Okay, that's fine. We do have an anime podcast. So I don't think you need to.
Yeah,
no. But yeah, so there was a Super Bowl ad for Tubi. So it's kind of nice that like there was an ad for like a streaming service that I was like, oh, I have something on there.
Yeah.
So you can check that out. It's free. Actually, the it's on DVD on Amazon for $5 now, too. So.
Oh, nice.
You want a physical copy? I have one copy.
Yeah. I need to get one. I'll get one.
Yeah. And you can check out David's comic books.
I've got comics. Some. My most recent one called Heat, Death, Love.
Yeah.
Some more sci-fi romance.
Aren't you working on like a wrestling comic?
Right now. It's the one I'm working on right now. It's kind of a prequel to it's kind of an in-between Yankee Doodle Strangler and my next one, big wrestling comic.
That's cool. And eventually we'll get working on our giant robot.
Our giant mech body horror.
What was it called?
Oh, God. His magic princess.
Magical giant princess robot. Giant robot. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which normally we start doing segments on it, but now we're at the point where we just got to write it.
Yeah, we have to actually make it now. Yeah,
I got an Apple Pencil now, so I guess I can. Nice. I'm doing some drawing. I think I send you some. I don't know how to really do like stuff. I don't know how to draw stuff.
That's okay.
I'm not necessarily a bad drawer. I just don't have any like. I don't know like how to. Yeah, I can probably learn. I just don't know how to learn.
Yeah,
because I was raised with people who were just instantly good artists. So I assume that's just how it was. It's just like you either draw or you can't. And I was like, oh, no, wait, you can actually practice and learn how to do this? I learned that like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. Yeah. But now we got these ding-dang AIs can just do it.
Well, I don't know what software everyone's using to do this. I did it on it. It just looks like a monstrosity body horror stuff of just like bunch of Columbos just going, just like weird faces and stuff, and I was like, where are they getting all this stuff?
I think you have to pay for the really good stuff.
Yeah, I ain't paying any of that.
Gotta pay for the software and like the computing,
because the free stuff looks hideous.
Oh yeah. It looks oof. Yeah.
And I'm just like, what are people getting all this stuff? And people's like, this could replace real art. I was like, well, they're gonna pay money for it. Okay, see ya.
See ya. Thank you.